Chapter 126. Go on. Apostrophe apostrophe observed the old man, in a mechanical obedience, it appeared, to Mr. Pecksniff's suggestion. I have been so wretched and so poor, apostrophe said Martin, that I am indebted to the charitable help of a stranger, in a land of strangers, for the means of returning here. All this tells against me in your mind, I know. I have given you cause to think I have been driven here wholly by want, and have not been led on, in any degree, by affection or regret. When I parted from you, grandfather, I deserved that suspicion, but I do not now. I do not now. Apostrophe, the chorus put its hand in its waistcoat, and smiled. Let him go on, my worthy sir, apostrophe it said. I know what you are thinking of, but don't express it prematurely. Apostrophe, old Martin raised his eyes to Mr. Pecksniff's face, and appearing to derive renewed instruction from his looks and words, said, once again, go on. Apostrophe, apostrophe, I have little more to say, apostrophe returned Martin. And as I say it now, with little or no hope, grandfather, whatever dawn of hope I had on entering the room, believe it to be true. At least, believe it to be true. Apostrophe, beautiful truth. Apostrophe, apostrophe, exclaimed the chorus, looking upward. How is your name profaned by vicious persons? You don't live in a well, my holy principle, but on the lips of false mankind. It is hard to bear with mankind, dear sir, addressing the elder Mr. Chuzzlewit, but let us do so meekly. It is our duty so to do. Let us be among the few who do their duty. If, apostrophe pursued the chorus, soaring up into a lofty flight, as the poet informs us, England expects every man to do his duty, England is the most sanguine country on the face of the earth, and will find itself continually disappointed. Apostrophe, upon that subject, apostrophe said Martin, looking calmly at the old man as he spoke, but glancing once at Mary, whose face was now buried in her hands, upon the back of his easy chair, upon that subject which first occasioned a division between us, my mind and heart are incapable of change. Whatever influence they have undergone, since that unhappy time, has not been one to weaken, but to strengthen me. I cannot profess sorrow for that, nor your resolution in that, nor shame in that. Nor would you wish me, I know, but that I might have trusted to your love, if I had thrown myself manfully upon it, that I might have won you over with ease, if I had been more yielding and more considerate, that I should have best remembered myself in forgetting myself, and recollecting you, reflection, solitude, and misery, have taught me. I came resolved to say this, and to ask your forgiveness, not so much in hope for the future, as in regret for the past, for all that I would ask of you is, that you would aid me to live, help me to get honest work to do, and I would do it. My condition places me at the disadvantage of seeming, to have only my selfish ends to serve, but try if that be so or not. Try if I be self-willed, obdurate, and haughty, as I was, or have been disciplined in a rough school. Let the voice of nature and association plead between us, grandfather, and do not, for one fault, however thankless, quite reject me. Apostrophe, apostrophe, as he ceased, the gray head of the old man drooped again, and he concealed his face behind his outspread fingers. My dear sir, apostrophe cried Mr. Pecksniff, bending over him, you must not give way to this. It is very natural, and very amiable, but you must not allow the shameless conduct of one whom you long ago cast off, to move you so far. Rouse yourself. Think, apostrophe said Pecksniff, think of me, my friend. Apostrophe, I will, apostrophe returned old Martin, looking up into his face. You recall me to myself. I will. Apostrophe, why, what, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, sitting down beside him in a chair which he drew up for the purpose, and tapping him playfully on the arm, what is the matter with my strong-minded compatriot, if I may venture to take the liberty of calling him by that endearing expression? Shall I have to scold my coadjutor, or to reason with an intellect like this? I think not. Apostrophe, no, no. There is no occasion, apostrophe said the old man. A momentary feeling. Nothing more. Apostrophe, indignation, apostrophe observed Mr. Pecksniff, will bring the scalding tear into the honest eye. I know he wiped his own elaborately. But we have highest duties to perform than that. Rouse yourself, Mr. Chuzzlewit. Shall I give expression to your thoughts, my friend? Apostrophe, yes, apostrophe said old Martin, leaning back in his chair, and looking at him, half in vacancy and half in admiration, as if he were fascinated by the man. Speak for me, Pecksniff, thank you. You are true to me. Thank you. Apostrophe, do not unman me, sir, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, shaking his hand vigorously, or I shall be unequal to the task. It is not agreeable to my feelings, my good sir, to address the person who is now before us, for when I ejected him from this house, after hearing of his unnatural conduct from your lips, I renounced communication with him forever. But you desire it, and that is sufficient. Young man, the door is immediately behind the companion of your infamy. Blush if you can, beckon without a blush, if you can't. Apostrophe, Martin looked as steadily at his grandfather, as if there had been a dead silence all this time. The old man looked no less steadily at Mr. Pecksniff. When I ordered you to leave this house upon the last occasion of your being dismissed from it with disgrace, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, when, stung and stimulated beyond endurance by your shameless conduct to this extraordinarily noble-minded individual, I exclaimed, go forth. I told you, that I wept for your depravity. Do not suppose, that the tear which stands in my eye at this moment, is shed for you. It is shed for him, sir. It is shed for him. Apostrophe, here Mr. Pecksniff, accidentally dropping the tear in question on the bald part of Mr. Chuzzlewit's head, wiped the place with his pocket handkerchief, and begged pardon. It is shed for him, sir, whom you seek to make the victim of your arts, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, whom you seek to plunder, to deceive, and to mislead. It is shed in sympathy with him, and admiration of him, not in pity for him, for happily he knows what you are. You shall not wrong him further, sir, in any way, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, quite transported with enthusiasm, while I have life. You may bestride my senseless course, sir. That is very likely. I can imagine a mind like yours deriving great satisfaction from any measure of that kind. But while I continue to be called upon to exist, sir, you must strike at him through me. Ah! Apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, shaking his head at Martin with indignant jocularity. And in such a cause you will find me, my young sir, an ugly customer. Apostrophe, apostrophe, still Martin looked steadily and mildly at his grandfather. Will you give me no answer, apostrophe, he said, at length, not a word? Apostrophe, you hear what has been said, apostrophe, replied the old man, without averting his eyes from the face of Mr. Pecksniff, who nodded encouragingly. I have not heard your voice. I have not heard your spirit, apostrophe, returned Martin. Tell him again, apostrophe said the old man, still gazing up in Mr. Pecksniff's face. I only hear, apostrophe replied Martin, strong in his purpose from the first, and stronger in it as he felt how Pecksniff winced and shrunk beneath his contempt. I only hear what you say to me, grandfather. Apostrophe, perhaps it was well for Mr. Pecksniff, that his venerable friend found in his, Mr. Pecksniff's, features an exclusive and engrossing object of contemplation, for if his eyes had gone astray, and he had compared young Martin's bearing with that of his zealous defender, the latter disinterested gentleman would scarcely have shown too greater advantage than on the memorable afternoon, when he took Tom Pinch's last receipt in full of all demands. One really might have thought there was some quality in Mr. Pecksniff, an emanation from the brightness and purity within him perhaps which set off and adorned his foes. They looked so gallant, and so manly beside him. Not a word? Apostrophe apostrophe said Martin, for the second time. I remember that I have a word to say, Pecksniff, apostrophe observed the old man. But a word. You spoke of being indebted to the charitable help of some stranger for the means of returning to England. Who is he? And what help in money did he render you? Apostrophe, although he asked this question of Martin, he did not look towards him, but kept his eyes on Mr. Pecksniff as before. It appeared to have become a habit with him, both in a literal and figurative sense, to look to Mr. Pecksniff alone. Martin took out his pencil, tore a leaf from his pocketbook, and hastily wrote down the particulars of his debt to Mr. Bevan. The old man stretched out his hand for the paper, and took it, but his eyes did not wander from Mr. Pecksniff's face. It would be a poor pride and a false humility, apostrophe said Martin, in a low voice, to say, I do not wish that to be paid, or that I have any present hope of being able to pay it. But I never felt my poverty so deeply as I feel it now. Apostrophe, read it to me, Pecksniff, apostrophe said the old man. Mr. Pecksniff, after approaching the perusal of the paper, as if it were a manuscript confession of a murder, complied. I think, Pecksniff, apostrophe said old Martin, I could wish that to be discharged. I should not like the lender, who was abroad, who had no opportunity of making inquiry, and who did, as he thought, a kind action, to suffer. Apostrophe, an honorable sentiment, my dear sir. Your own entirely. But a dangerous precedent, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff, permit me to suggest. Apostrophe, it shall not be a precedent, apostrophe returned the old man. It is the only recognition of him. But we will talk of it again. You shall advise me. There is nothing else? Apostrophe, nothing else, apostrophe said Mr. Pecksniff buoyantly, but for you to recover this intrusion, this cowardly and indefensible outrage on your feelings with all possible dispatch, and smile again. Apostrophe, you have nothing more to say? Apostrophe, apostrophe inquired the old man, laying his hand with unusual earnestness on Mr. Pecksniff's sleeve. Mr. Pecksniff would not say what rose to his lips. For reproaches, he observed, were useless. You have nothing at all to urge? You are sure of that? If you have, no matter what it is, speak freely. I will oppose nothing that you ask of me, apostrophe said the old man. The tears rose in such abundance to Mr. Pecksniff's eyes at this proof of unlimited confidence on the part of his friend, that he was fain to clasp the bridge of his nose convulsively, before he could at all compose himself. When he had the power of utterance again, he said with great emotion, that he hoped he should live to deserve this, and added, that he had no other observation whatever to make. For a few moments the old man sat looking at him, with that blank and motionless expression which is not uncommon in the faces of those whose faculties are on the wane, in age. But he rose up firmly too, and walked towards the door, from which Mark withdrew to make way for him. The obsequious Mr. Pecksniff proffered his arm. The old man took it. Turning at the door, he said to Martin, waving him off with his hand, "You have heard him. Go away. It is all over. Go." Apostrophe, Mr. Pecksniff murmured certain cheering expressions of sympathy and encouragement as they retired, and Martin, awakening from the stupor into which the closing portion of the scene had plunged him, to the opportunity afforded by their departure, caught the innocent cause of all in his embrace, and pressed her to his heart. "Dear girl," apostrophe apostrophe said Martin. "He has not changed you. Why, what an impotent and harmless knave the fellow is. Apostrophe, apostrophe, you have restrained yourself so nobly. You have borne so much. Apostrophe, restrained myself. Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried Martin, cheerfully. You were by, and were unchanged, I knew. What more advantage did I want? The sight of me was such a bitterness to the dog, that I had my triumph in his being forced to endure it. But tell me, love, for the few hasty words we can exchange now are precious, what is this which has been rumored to me? Is it true that you are persecuted by this knave's addresses? I was, dear Martin, and to some extent am now, but my chief source of unhappiness has been anxiety for you. Why did you leave us in such terrible suspense? Sickness, distance, the dread of hinting at our real condition, the impossibility of concealing it except in perfect silence, the knowledge that the truth would have pained you infinitely more than uncertainty and doubt, said Martin, hurriedly, as indeed everything else was done and said, in those few hurried moments, were the causes of my writing only once. But Pecksniff, you needn't fear to tell me the whole tale, for you saw me with him face to face, hearing him speak, and not taking him by the throat. What is the history of his pursuit of you? Is it known to my grandfather? Yes. And he assists him in it? No. She answered eagerly. Thank heaven! Cried Martin, that it leaves his mind unclouded in that one respect. I do not think, said Mary, it was known to him at first. When this man had sufficiently prepared his mind, he revealed it to him by degrees. I think so, but I only know it from my own impression. Now from anything they told me. Then he spoke to me alone. My grandfather did? Said Martin. Yes, spoke to me alone, and told me what the hound had said. Cried Martin. Don't repeat it. And said I knew well what qualities he possessed, that he was moderately rich, in good repute, and high in his favor and confidence. But seeing me very much distressed, he said that he would not control or force my inclinations, but would content himself with telling me the fact. He would not pain me by dwelling on it, or reverting to it, nor has he ever done so since, but has truly kept his word. The man himself? Asked Martin. He has had few opportunities of pursuing his suit. I have never walked out alone, or remained alone an instant in his presence. Dear Martin, I must tell you, she continued, that the kindness of your grandfather to me remains unchanged. I am his companion still. An indescribable tenderness and compassion seem to have mingled themselves with his old regard, and if I were his only child, I could not have a gentler father. What former fancy or old habit survives in this, when his heart has turned so cold to you, is a Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.